Welcome to the Chris Raby Show on Scoops with DannyMac.com. It is the Wednesday, January 13th, 2021 edition of the program, and excited to visit with Ryan Nanny coming up in just a couple of minutes from SB Nation and a ton of other places. You probably know him on Twitter, at least, as @CelebrityHotTub. But Ryan does a great job in the world of college football, has an interesting path, and always enjoy reading Ryan, so really looking forward to getting a chance to have him on the program. We'll do that in just a moment. Speaking of the program, don't forget to subscribe to the Scoops with Danny Mac podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. That is how you get the Chris Raby Show delivered to you each and every day. Take a screenshot of a review after you subscribe and send it to me on Twitter at @CHRABE, and you might find a Scoops with Danny Mac hat coming your way. But really excited about this conversation, so let's not waste any more time and let's get to it as we welcome in Ryan Nanny from SBNation.com and again a bunch of other places on the internet. That's where you can find all of his fantastic writing. Follow him on Twitter at @CelebrityHotTub. You know the Twitter account. He's got the Eddie Murphy avatar, and I wonder, Ryan, like, how many times people make the connection are like, oh, that's you, your Celebrity Hot Tub on Twitter. And how often do you get asked about people asking you that, I guess, is my next question, man.
I think the main questions I get are why do you look nothing like Eddie Murphy? Because I don't. And I will fully concede that. And I'm sorry for anyone who feels misled. And I think there's only one person who actually thought I was Eddie Murphy, fortunately. And then the second question people usually ask is, did the Outback Bowl let you keep the Bloomin' Onion costume? They did not. It is very large. It is like roughly the size of like a smart car, you know, like a really small, only two person rented in like a European city, that kind of car.
He is Ryan Nanny. He's with us on the Chris Raby Show. I'm wondering, man, if you could share a little bit for people that don't know about your background, because of course you're all over the internet now and writing and all sorts of multimedia, but about college football is your full-time gig. It wasn't always though. So if you don't mind, give us a little rundown of how you came to be where you are, especially as it relates to Every Day Should Be Saturday, SB Nation, and kind of the path for Ryan Nanny to this point.
Yeah, sure. So this is probably now like 12 years ago or something like that, but I was just sort of a commenter on Every Day Should Be Saturday when Spencer Hall and Holly Anderson were running it. And I was, at the time, I was a lawyer for a corporate law firm in New York.
You technically, well, are you still a lawyer, Ryan?
No, I that's the thing. There is a process where you have to basically tell the bar, like, hey, I'm not going to do this anymore, and I don't want to get in any trouble for that. So I was like cleaning out my office the other day. I have a letter from like the state of New York judicial system that's like, you are officially not a lawyer anymore. So yeah, I was just like a commenter sort of, you know, messing around. Definitely only during off work hours, never during work hours. That would be untowards. Holly left to get, I think she was going to Sports Illustrated at that point. I don't remember. Might've been Yahoo. Might've been Grantland. She's worked so many great places. And Spencer hit me up and was sort of like, hey, would you like to sort of do this on a lark? That turned into doing it on More Than a Lark, sort of as a part-time thing. That turned into eventually a full-time job at SB Nation writing about college football. And that has turned into like seven other things. But it was a thing, like people sometimes ask me like, oh, how did you do this? What was your plan? And it's really sort of weird to say like, there wasn't one. I sort of stumbled into it. I got very lucky. It's not necessarily super replicable or a thing I would recommend. And I feel very fortunate that it's sort of an opportunity that came along, but it's not like at no point was it something that I said like, oh, that's a thing I want to do? It just sort of materialized.
It's funny, man. And like I tell people all the time, whether it's in, you know, like a real capacity, like with people that I work with or that are trying to get in the business or interns or students at the university in St. Louis where I teach a broadcasting course, like no matter what you want to do, really in any, like any profession, but especially in media, you have to do it. If you want to podcast, you have to podcast. If you want to write, you have to write. If you want to do play-by-play, you have to do play-by-play. It's not rocket science, but you have to do it. You just need reps. And you also need to develop some like dependability. Like whether it's your family, your mom and dad, and a couple of buddies who are reading your stuff or listening to your stuff at first, like they have to be able to read it and listen to it when they think they're going to be able to read it and listen to it.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think the other side of that coin is not feeling like you have to box yourself in, sort of saying like, okay, well, my job is X, but if, you know, I'm a writer, but if I want to explore being on camera or trying a podcast or something, like being willing to give it a shot. A lot of these things don't work.
Yeah, and you can kind of do everything with a phone and a laptop.
Yeah, and going into it with the sense of like, if it's not successful, if it's not this like huge thing that turns into like your next career path or whatever, that doesn't mean it was a failure. There are still things you can learn. There are still like opportunities that can lead to. And worst case, you can sort of know like, okay, that's not a format I like. That's not the thing where I shine best. And you can sort of like focus on your strengths and not necessarily worry about like, well, I'm not planning to go on camera anymore, so that's fine. That honestly, it like makes your wardrobe selection a lot easier.
I am squarely in the corner of Team Elastic Waistband. That's been my issue now for the last couple of months, and I'm going to have to change that.
Full comfort, yeah.
I'm going to have to change allegiances. Let's talk a little bit about the college football season, Ryan, as we're with Ryan Nanny on the Chris Raby Show, and I'll ask you about a great piece that you wrote talking about some of the salutations or some of the just different ways that we address people in sports, especially coaches. And it's always kind of interesting to see, you know, media members, I guess the best example, referring to coaches or referring to owners, and referring to owners sometimes Mr. or Sir, even if, you know, they don't work for the said owner. You know, you pointed out in your great piece, it's kind of like, hey, Coach Saban, Tommy Tide from the Roll Tide Times. Two-part question. First part, Roll Tide. It's kind of a thing. And like, I don't know, but especially like in a time where the interactions with the media that they have and the information that is disseminated to the public, it's different. The mechanism is different. Like, what do you make of all that?
Right. Yeah. And what's interesting about it is I don't think.
You shout out to Tommy Tide, by the way.
I don't think most of coaches, especially Nick Saban, frankly, I don't think he actually cares. Like, I don't know that he's thrilled with a stranger just being like, hey, Nick, or hey, Saban, or whatever. Like, but I don't think these are guys who are so focused on the specific, you know, things that they have to do with their football team, from, you know, film review to planning practice to putting together a game plan to recruiting to this, that, and the other, that I think they view the media part of it as like, this is just a thing I have to get through. And I don't think they're necessary. Most of them, I don't think are going to stop and say, hey, you better call me coach. I don't think they actually care. So it's this weird thing where other people have decided, whether it's fans or whether it's other media members, they've decided like, you got to call him coach. He's earned that.
But they understand, like, is there like a reverse Pavlov's dog where they kind of know the reaction that people will present to them when they act a certain way?
I think so that's part of it. The other thing, I was talking to a couple of friends about this. The other thing that's fun is like, if you've seen a bunch of coaches hanging around each other, that's how they talk to one another. And it has nothing to do with sort of like who's in charge or who ranks where. Like, you can be the strength coach, you can be a position coach, whatever. It's all just like coach. Like, that's just sort of the shorthand ease for it. And this is my new theory. It's because most of them can't remember names. So it's just easy to just sort of say like, hey, coach, how's it going, coach? Great job, coach. Hey, coach, come here for a second. Like, if you could just call everybody else like, hey, human.
That's why they call players by their numbers, right?
Yes, because it's right there.
Yeah, because they don't necessarily know at the start of camp the name of the walk-on fourth-string tight end. He's 8'3", he's 83.
Yeah, there's a hundred, you know, you got 100 players on a roster. You got other, you know, another 100 or so that you're out recruiting. No, you're going with numbers. You're going with shorthand. And that's probably why coach is a useful, coach is more of a useful title than like an honorific at this point.
You had some fantastic examples of how we could go just completely the other end of the spectrum. Give me some of the names that you're working with.
Sure. So my other option is, you know, this was, I think, back in the Middle Ages, medieval times, and sort of up through the Renaissance, I think people got tired of saying like King so-and-so or Queen so-and-so. Like, that's boring. And it requires you to remember not just somebody's name, but like, okay, which George are you? Are you the fourth? Like, it's tiresome. So that's why we have throughout history this new sort of system of first name, the adjective. So Ivan the Terrible. Like, that tells you a lot. Like, now I know, okay, that's who that is. I know based on this structure that he is a person of importance, and now I know something about him. So, like, instead of Coach Saban, just call him, like, Saban the Unimpressed, because he's not impressed. He's definitely not impressed with you if you're the media. He's just there to get the job done. There's no question you can ask. There's no statement you can make that's going to make him impressed with you. And now, if I am new to the Alabama beat, I know, like, that's Saban the Unimpressed. That sort of gives me the flavor of what he's about. We're all on the same page, and we can just move on. And that way, when new coaches come in, we get some time to figure out, like, who this person is and what they're about. Less the untimely. Like, Les Miles doesn't have a good sense of time and space. So let's just make that his name. It's a lot easier.
You know, I told someone this that was at spring training once, and it was after, like, a media session or a scrum or something. And listen, I wasn't trying to, like, act holier than thou or act like I have any idea really what I'm doing. But one thing I do believe and that I shared with this person was, listen, in my opinion, there is no question that you can ask as a member of the media in a press conference or scrum or whatever setting where the general manager of the team will stop, pause, turn, and look at you and say, would you like a job in our front office? Like, I don't think it's going to happen.
No.
Yes, Saban in particular, yeah. So unimpressed. And yeah. So just peak Saban at the halftime of the Notre Dame game when Allison Williams was trying to conduct the standard walking off the field interview.
Coach Saban, you said that
I can't hear you.
You said that they were going to, can you hear me now?
No. What?
You said that they would try and take away Devontae Smith. Why have they not been able to do that?
What?
What's been the key to keeping Devontae Smith so involved with this offense?
Well, we always move him around, so it makes it hard for him to double him. But, you know, we got to keep playing on offense.
Peak Saban. Greg Popovich liked that too, right? Like, I think in some ways it's a protest in between quarters. He feels like it's stupid that he has to stand there and answer two questions, so he kind of messes with them. But, like, Greg Popovich, in interactions I've had after practice, will stand there and talk basketball forever and be charming and funny. And he's become and is one of the most poignant, I think, voices that we have for things that are bigger than sports. And actually, we'll speak to that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, very few coaches at this point get to where they are because it's like, wow, how deft they are with the media, how good they are at, like, winning over the media. Because it's a functional job. And that's not to discount what it is.
And sometimes the guys that just win the room don't do that well.
Right, exactly. Like, you know, it's important, I think, to not have an antagonistic relationship with the media. But, like, if you are Nick Saban at halftime of a semifinal, even one that's going, you know, that's going well, you are just like, every second you are taking with the sideline reporter is time you are not spending with your team, making adjustments, reviewing what worked, what didn't, talking about changes you're going to make. Like, and I think because good coaches think about these things, they're like, these are discrete units of time and you are taking one from me. And I understand why. And I understand that it's a necessary part of the entertainment experience that we are all putting on. But there's not an incentive for them to be like, no, I really want to, like, kill this. I want this to be so insightful, so inspiring, so thoughtful.
Yeah, he comes in. Sark is like, hey, how'd it go?
be like, oh man, you know, I flubbed a line, but then I like gathered myself. We reset. Everything was no, like,
just hit check Allison Williams. No big
deal. Yeah. Like I think the minute these are over, they're done thinking about them.
You know, and I will say, for as quick as folks are to jump on Twitter when Nick Saban does something that is extremely Nick Saban-y, for me, it was refreshing, Ryan, to see at the end of the national championship game, the emotion, and it kind of humanized things for me because he's the ultimate football machine. And it kind of just showed, like, this year has really sucked, man. Like, it sucked for everyone.
Yeah.
Probably has even really, really sucked for Nick Saban. And to see the emotion and the care that he obviously has for his players and his staff and his program, that was pretty cool, man. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, I think sometimes we collectively misread Nick Saban as, like, the thing you're talking about, the football robot. And I think what it really is that he's just a, like, fairly private person. Because most of the players you talk to that go through that program, and there are like sometimes little hints of it during the season, but even the players are like, shh, don't say that. Don't tell them that like coach told us he loved us or whatever. Like he wants to keep it all very internal. But there is a genuine sense throughout his career that he does care about his team as people and as like people about to go out into the larger world. And yeah, I think like that probably was even more true this season. It's tough because I don't think it would be a bad thing if we got a bigger window into that. And if we didn't have to wait for Alabama to win the national title before we could kind of be like, oh, right, humans doing this thing and having feelings and having stress to deal with. But like, again, because the functional part of Nick Saban is like, that's not going to help me win a football game. We don't usually see it until there are no more football games to be played.
Yeah, I guess in a lot of ways, Ryan, it's probably just like, any CEO of a major, major, major corporation. It's just that the CEO doesn't, as long as things are going well, doesn't have to do press conferences multiple times a day times per week. Saban and the Alabama dynasty, Ryan, as we're visiting with Ryan Nanny of SB Nation, follow him on Twitter at Celebrity Hot Tub. Is there any part of it that's bad for college football, that's bad for the product of college football for college football fans? And I don't mean the playoff format. I don't mean should Coastal Carolina have gotten in or UCF a couple of years ago. Like, I don't mean that. I just mean the team being so good and the dynasty being such a machine that's what it is. It's just kind of a machine.
I hesitate to say that it's a bad thing, in part because, like, if it is, I don't know what the solution is. The very boring answer is if people are tired of Alabama being the dominant program in the sport, other teams should get better. Like, that's
almost just boring if you're not an Alabama fan. I don't know. It's kind of a weird question, but it's one I think about.
Yeah. And look, the way I look at it, Alabama is the defining dynasty of the last, let's say, 15 years or so. But within that, it is not the kind of dynasty. It's not UConn women's basketball where, like, it is unquestioned, unceasing. Like, that is a different level. And I'm not saying that to discount Alabama.
Saban more likable than Gina?
But, like, this is a coach who will, like, this is a team that will lose to Ole Miss on occasion. This is a team that, you know, has lost in the championship game, has lost in the semifinal, has missed out on the playoffs. They are not, like, they are the most important or the largest force in this universe, but there is still room for other teams to pop up. I think, like, one thing we are probably forgetting in the wake of this year is that this is only the second undefeated team Nick Saban's had at Alabama. The first one was in 2009. This is like, by all accounts, this was the best team he has fielded overall, certainly the best offense he has fielded since he has been there. But that to me suggests that, like anything else, there are ebbs and flows. Now, the problem is if you're Alabama, a down year is two losses and you beat Michigan in a bowl game. That's not the playoff. But still, there is enough space in there. And I think, you know, there's not necessarily room for 10 teams to be up there competing with Alabama, but there's room for four or five. So I think most of the Alabama problems go back to, like, how much do we want the focus of college football to be on the national title. What Alabama's doing is not wildly different from what Nebraska was doing in the 80s and the early 90s, what Miami was doing around the same time, what Florida State used to be in its heyday under Bobby Bowden, what USC has been for little blips, what Oklahoma, like there, it, none of this is particularly new. I think the thing is that has changed is that in part because ESPN is the thing that owns the playoff. So much of the focus is on playoff championship, playoff championship, playoff championship. And it makes it harder to just like, it makes it harder to just be like, wow, what Cincinnati and what Coastal and what some of these other schools have done is really impressive, because it's like, didn't play for a championship. Who cares?
And I say this seriously. It's that there are so many more takes now. We cannot escape the takes. Yeah. There's always a take on Twitter. There's always a take on TV. There's always a take following us. And, you know, in the 90s, I guess we were just, we weren't so lousy with takes, Ryan. And it was like, well, Nebraska's the best team because everyone says Nebraska's the best team. And we didn't argue about it all day.
Yeah. I think the other thing that has happened, and this is not us, this is at the athletic departments, is athletic departments, and maybe the boosters fall into this category too, have really made all of their focus on this as well. Like Auburn firing Gene Chizik is really, to me, emblematic of, okay, everybody is very, very focused on this very tiny mountaintop that only holds so many teams and players. Like, I don't know that Brian Harsin is necessarily going to do a better job at Auburn. And it has nothing to do with how good of a coach he is. It's that he's still like, it's that Alabama's still there and Texas A&M is still there and LSU is still there. And there's not room for four teams to win the SEC West. It doesn't work that way.
You know, even a program like the University of Illinois, Ryan, who parted ways with Lovie Smith, you could kind of, I believe, read the writing on the wall the way that his contract extension a couple of years ago was built and kind of protected them and almost prepared for a buyout. It wasn't even like an escape hatch. It was like, well, if this happens, it's actually not bad. And, you know, then we save the recruits and then we've got the new facility and it's dollars, dollars, dollars. And dollars matter more than the wins and losses because right. Eventually or ultimately for a program like Illinois, unfortunately, I'm not sure that they can get to the number of wins that would get them a date against Alabama in Miami this past Monday.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the margins are so thin. Yeah. And that has very little to do with like the effort or the talent that you are putting forth, and everything to do with like the structure of how the sport is right now.
Well, it's part of what makes college football such a wonderful sport. And we can debate things like what old-timey medieval name Nick Saban should have. And you can read Ryan Nanny debating that and giving his thoughts at SBNation.com. Follow him on Twitter at Celebrity Hot Tub. All right, I was telling you earlier that I have started doing some drafts at the ends of some of my interviews. Had Drew Silva on from Roto World earlier this week talking some baseball. And once the baseball takes had been cleared from the table, it was time for the main course. And that was a draft of fast food side items.
Ooh,
so
okay.
In the spirit of drafting and in the spirit of football, Ryan Nanny, you have agreed to take part in a draft with me today. We are going to draft the best football snacks, or I guess the best football watching food, but the best football snacks is the draft, and you will have first pick as you are the guest. It'll be four rounds, non-snake, no beverages, and we'll say that any type of dip or spread, you get the applicable vessel or vehicle for the dip or spread, whether it be a chip or a cracker, any type of you know, meat that would need a bun, you can add that. So just really feel free to explore the space. It's a draft of the best football snacks, the best football watching food. And Ryan Nanny, again, as the guest, I will give you first pick of our draft of football food.
Okay. I'm going to go very safe with my first pick. I'm going salsa. Chips coming with it, obviously. Like, it's, you know, portable. It really doesn't, it doesn't have like a ton of temperature importance. Like, it can be cold, it can be room temperature, whatever. It's not going to go bad over the course of a football game or a stretch of football games, can go in and out of the fridge, has good shelf life. Yeah, I think salsa. Yeah.
Such a workhorse.
Yes, yes. Like this is definitely like a standout left tackle. Like this is not a sexy pick, and I get that. But I think this is an important building block, and so I'm going to go salsa with my first pick.
I like it. That's a strong building block for your franchise. I'm going to go a little unorthodox, and I will say that like queso and guac are ineligible because they kind of are in the salsa family, but other dips are still on the table. But I'm not going to do that, Ryan. I am going to maybe fall a little bit in love with some combine results, with some upside, perhaps. Hope this doesn't become a theme. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I'm going to go with an item that I believe is truly a crowd pleaser. So maybe a little exotic. I don't know how this pick will be met, what kind of reaction it will garner, but I'm going to go chili.
Ooh, that's an interesting pick. Talk me through it.
So a couple of things. I feel like chili is a great kind of social food and a great planning food. So you can get the text thread, the email thread started with folks right. that are going to be at the gathering, and you can swap chili recipes, what you like to do with yours. In the same way, plenty of great accoutrements where, you know, you can personalize it, whether you want you know, the Cholula, you want to douse it with the hot sauce. If you go sour cream, if you use, you know, a lot of shredded cheese, no shredded cheese, you can personalize the chili, and then you kind of have your own orbit, right? Like you're not dipping into the bowl and doing like the half hunched over hover over the table where the dip is. I'm not going back eight times sheepishly. It's just, I get my bowl of chili and then it's my bowl of chili. And then throughout the night, the chili kind of congeals and I feel like it's better with age. It's like a fine wine. Certainly the next day.
Mellows with age, yeah.
So I stand by that. Chili is my number one pick.
Important question. Beans or no beans?
I'm a bean guy. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So let's see. With chili's a good pick. I'm not going to lie. I think with my next pick, I'm going to take, this is a little bit unorthodox as well. I'm going to go meatballs. And here's why. Meatballs are they're multiple. This is my halfback who can block, who can go out and catch passes, who can maybe like return kicks, because I'm going to put them out. I'm going to put them out with toothpicks if people just want to like grab a couple and go. I'm going to put them out. Maybe I'm going to put some small buns out there. You want to make a little meatball, Sammy? Here you go. Here we go. This is something that's got versatility. It's hearty in the same way that you've really brought the hearty with chili for your first pick. And I think it's something that's going to allow people to scale appropriately. You want a bowl with eight meatballs in it? Go for it. You just want two meatballs? That's fine. You know, there's room for all of us here. So that's my number two.
It's a great pick. It is a great pick. And I'll tell you why. With all due respect, and it's the same way nobody drafts a left tackle in fantasy football, nobody comes home from a Super Bowl party and is like, oh my God, can you believe it? They had salsa. Oh, unbelievable. Amazing.
It's like, cool, did they also have a bathroom? Like, who's impressed by this?
No, it's great and you eat it, but nobody's like that. But I would come home and be like, you know what? They had meatballs. And not only were there meatballs, but there were little like brioche buns. And there was, you know, provolone cheese. And there were also toothpicks. So you could go back and, you know, go just straight up meatball a little bit later. You could mix and match. There were variations. High upside, crowd pleaser. Yeah. Love it, love it, love it. Super high ceiling.
Yep.
All right, I'm going to go back to the dip family. And I'm going to take what I believe is and has become the best dip really in the land, Ryan. It also is hearty enough to be a little bit more than a snack. I feel like you can make variations of it. It's a crowd pleaser. I just, again, am going big upside. Maybe I'm getting a little too enamored with some of the international prospects, some of the European players being drafted into the NBA. But again, going a little exotic with this, and I'm going buffalo chicken dip.
Okay, no, I like that.
So it's got to be my top ranked dip. Like it's better than spinach and artichoke dip. It's better than, you know, really any dip I believe that's out there. And, you know, I've got a duo that's going to stick to your stomach right now with chili and with buffalo chicken.
This is very warm. You like a very warm. meal you've got going on.
Yeah, there's a lot of mixing and matching for the people, and maybe some stomachs rumbling.
I need something sort of, I think I need something starchy for this pick. Something to sort of like help things along. And this is the tricky part, because I'm assuming, maybe we should have said this at the front, I'm assuming that this is all like stuff you're making and not necessarily stuff you get at a restaurant. And like, I'll be honest, I love a French fry. I don't love a frozen French fry that much. Same with an onion ring. But I'll tell you what I can pull out and what I think is a good option. I'm going to go with a tater tot here. That's my number three. So that's what I'm putting out to give everybody something that's, again, small enough and scalable enough that if you just want a couple, you just want a couple. It's got crunch. It's got some hotness, some salt to it. And it's going to give you a good base layer. So that's what I'm going for my number three, tater tots. Fresh, piping hot, out of the oven. Really just as good at home as they are in most restaurants and bars, I would argue.
Ryan, you're speaking my language, man, because I was the brains behind, the engineer, the architect of a tater tot bar with my family on New Year's Day, and it was glorious. Just a tacho bar is a bunch of tater tots, then all the toppings that you would just throw on nachos. It was incredible. It was absolutely incredible. Nachos with the tater tot foundation.
I went to one wedding that had this, and it was amazing.
All right. This is controversial because wings are still sitting in the green room. People are going to yell about it. I don't care. This is, you know, our draft, and I'm not going wings. I'm not going wings that somebody's making.
Listen, if this was a bar food conversation, I think wings would have gone off in one of the first three picks.
You never really make enough. Nobody's wings that they make are as good as they think they are, I feel like.
I would say 9 out of 10 times that's true. There are some people who can really make a wing. But most of the time, yes, I think you're right.
It can just be tough for a variety of reasons. So I'm going to veer off the beaten path a little bit again, but I feel like another easy communal dish can be easy to make, from a like a preparation maintenance standpoint, but it's so good. You can't beat it. We're going to stick with, you know, our hearty theme, and I'm going to go pulled pork, Ryan. I'm going to go pulled pork.
Sure, absolutely. That's a great pick.
Yeah, strap on your feed bag. That's the motto at my party.
Respectfully, I hope your party has a lot of toilet paper. That's all I'm going to say.
Give me your fourth pick, Ryan, of football watching foods.
All right, this is where I'm going to reach. This is where I'm going to go. Like, this is not something I think most people would have at a Super Bowl party, but I think they're wrong and at a football party, and I think they should embrace it. The mini ice cream sandwich. I think you get a bunch of these bad boys, you throw them in the freezer, and it's handheld. It's not terribly messy. It's like very refreshing. I got something sweet on the menu here. And you know what? Because they're a mini ice cream sandwich, who's to say if you have two or three? They're so small. Nobody even knows. It's probably only 5 calories, right? Go for it.
Love it. Palate cleanser. I was thinking about a dessert. That's perfect. I was thinking about maybe for my last pick, like the token guy that went to school in the area, or the hometown kid doesn't really have a shot, more of a ceremonial pick, a throwaway. That would be the sad veggie tray, but I'm not going to do it. I'm doubling down on my team identity.
Do it. Live.
And
go big.
I'm going sliders.
Wow. Okay.
We have alienated the wing community.
Man.
They're furious. They're going to be sleeping on this overnight because they were not selected out of the green room. But the draft is complete. And Ryan Nanny, you have chips and salsa, etc., meatballs, tater tots, and ice cream sandwiches. I have chili, buffalo chicken dip, pulled pork, and sliders. Instant analysis, draft grades, winners, losers. I just have a very, very hearty lineup. I'm kind of second-guessing it now.
I'll give your draft one thing over mine, though, Chris. Nobody is leaving your party being like, I wish there was more food. Nobody is leaving that party being like, I wish there was more food. I'm still hungry.
Yeah, no one is leaving my party because no one can move.
Nobody is stopping for Taco Bell or a chicken sandwich or something on the way home from your party.
Yeah, no one's leaving saying like, you know what I need? bunch more carbs.
No, you should probably put out like a candy bowl of Zantac or something with yours, but
Ryan, you know the rules. If you're coming to my party, carb up, and you're probably not leaving unless you roll out the door.
Abandon all hope, all ye who enter. Yeah, I got you.
Well, I welcome all the analysis and hate, and I welcome the vitriol of the wing community. I welcome it with open arms. Bring it on, folks. I'll see you dorks on Twitter. Ryan Nanny, what a pleasure it's been, man. SBNation.com, amongst other places, at Celebrity Hot Tub on Twitter. I've been a fan and have always enjoyed reading you and listening and watching the stuff you do. So appreciate you coming on, man, and shooting the breeze. Appreciate you rolling with the draft, and we'll see how the draft grades shake out.
I have confidence in you.
Appreciate it, brother. We'll see you soon, man.
Thanks, man.